Hi, Scoot.
Mother fucking fuck ass bitch. Fucking god damn it.
What happened to your secondary backup?
I had to repolarize the Unimatrix Zero. I had to fucking use an inverse tachyon beam to get my fucking PC to work.
So how's your day been, Scott?
Well, I almost had a warp core breach. I had to Geordi roll through the door.
Isn't the Geordi roll when he tumbles over the railing?
No, that's when he does the tuck and roll.
That's a railing kill.
Yeah, when he rolls under the door when it's closing for a warp core breach. Because when a warp core breach happens, you don't want to be in the same room. If you're in a different room, it's fine.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to be in the same room as a warp core breach. It's a good thing they close those doors.
You know what always seemed peculiar to me?
It's like fire. You know, if there's a fire in a party, you just close the door and seal it off, and then you're fine.
Well, yeah, because the fire will just smother itself. No, what always seemed peculiar to me is, like, I assume the isolation door is there partly for, if they have to eject the warp core, they need to seal that chamber so, you know, the vacuum of space does not suck out the ship from the inside.
Blown out.
But, like, why would they have that whole chamber be the isolation path and not, like, just the immediate column around the warp core? Like, just slide a sheath down over that seals the whole thing. And just...
Like a warp core foreskin?
Or a warp core condom, yes. Warp core skin.
Why don't just throw up, you know, the force fields like they do whenever the hull breaches?
Right, I mean... That whole isolation door thing just seems kind of pointless.
Dramatic?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it gives Jor LaForge reason to roll on the ground and look badass while he's doing it.
I mean, it's not like Geordi has a lot of other opportunities to roll around on the floor in his life.
That's exactly. Why he specifically had it installed.
I'm trying to imagine Scotty having to roll underneath the door.
Movie Scotty.
Yeah, movie Scotty, of course.
Well, I mean, he's already rolling.
It's
so.
Pretty easy. He just goes over and someone gives him a push.
I was more thinking, like, he misjudges his girth and gets stuck in the door.
See, I imagine, like, Scotty being exaggerated to, like, you know, Kirby-esque proportions.
Well,
where he looks like Orson Welles?
Yes. Or he's just like a round ball with a mustache and a face on one end and a little paddle ham sticking out.
And just from somewhere within the spherical mass, a Scottish accent emanates.
From the mustache.
Right, yeah, that wiggles and moves sideways when he talks.
Uh-huh.
Right. All right, well, I got to put my PC back together again when we're done with the podcast, because all the doors are off, there are screws everywhere. Fuck.
It sounds like it's your PC made by IKEA?
No, it's modular. That's what's awesome about having a PC. It's not like an Apple where if, like, a pixel dies on the screen, you have to throw away the entire machine and buy a whole new one.
I would just buy a new monitor.
No, it's Apple. So I'm saying a pixel goes out on your monitor, you have to throw away the whole thing.
Oh, so I throw the monitor and the computer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Apple burn. Ooh.
Except, you know, my computer's not attached to the monitor.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway.
Well, my computer can fit in a lunchbox. So there.
So can mine if it's a really big lunchbox.
It's your mom's lunchbox.
Yeah. It's all the PCs in the world can fit in your mom's lunchbox.
Your mom's lunchbox.
Watson could fit in your mom's lunchbox. Cray 2? No?
All right. Are Cray 2 still a thing?
No, not really.
I don't even know what that is.
In the 80s, it was like a godlike supercomputer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, in other words, it's something that could fit in your pocket now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure a modern iPhone is probably more powerful than it now.
You should buy one. Install it at your house.
It's just like a power line running directly to it with, like, its own AC and everything.
So what I want to see someone do is, like, round up a bunch of vacuum tubes and a giant touchscreen and basically build a vacuum tube powered iPhone.
Oh my god.
Because, like, I mean, I'm sure you could do it. It's just a matter of how much space it would take.
I want someone to build that computer from the Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah. The Megavac or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
If only Batman the Animated Series could decide what time period it was trying to be in.
It's in the awesome one, whatever that is.
Podcasts, the final frontier. These are the Star Trek episodes of the podcast Superhero Time. Our continuing mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek. Alienate even more listeners. And boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek. With Chris.
Real ladies have nacelles, boys.
Hey, Mickey.
Why, I'm no spy. I'm just a plain, simple tractor trailer.
Scott.
Every time I poop, it's just going to float around.
And Fort Max.
I'm gay, and I'm a little straight for Bashir.
I really enjoyed this episode.
Oh, good. We should probably get to it.
On a lighter note, considering we're an hour fucking late.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, it's all my fault. Yeah, this episode was fucking rad.
So, has your cat tried getting into your computer?
Well, bits and pieces, mainly fur, which I think is part of the problem. I think one of my connections to one of my hard drives had some dust in it. So once I pulled it out, reconnected it, blew it out with some canned air, seems to be working okay.
So your computer is a Nintendo?
Yes, I had to pull it out and blow on it. I had to take out the Skype cartridge and blow on it and plug it back in.
Of course, that really just makes it sound more like a Commodore.
Yes. I got this huge stack of 5 1/4 floppies over here.
Do you have all the various external add-ons just daisy-chained together going across the length of your desk?
Yeah, they all use serial cables and serial ports.
No, I'm thinking more of that old TI desktop computer where the various extensions just plug into each other and it just keeps going lengthwise.
Yeah, pretty much.
Seems like a good idea at the time.
Seems like the only idea at the time.
That's basically the USB hub of its day.
Yeah, the fact that you could seriously chain things.
But we're here to talk about Star Trek, and it's the last week of our Holodeck Misadventures month, and we're going out on a high note.
Yes. The return of Moriarty!
Which was very confusing to Fort Max, who had never seen the origin of Moriarty.
Ah.
Well, it was a good episode.
But you would have known about that, Scott, if you were here an hour ago.
Well, I had some technical difficulties I had to take care of. Technical difficulties. The first episode with Moriarty was, the premise was kind of dumb, but I thought it was a cool episode. But this one was far superior.
Well, the first Moriarty episode's mostly better for the usual Pulaski robot racism.
Oh, yeah. Jesus, that's right, Pulaski.
Yeah, she was central to that episode.
Yeah. So I'm not have to bring that up.
Oh, I'll always bring up Pulaski.
She's
the best part of season 2.
In front of Data's quarters, burning a wooden R. The robot. R? Return to Cinder?
No, she's got
this
the...
This is deck F.
No, she's burning a giant power button symbol.
Yes. It's an on button symbol.
But yes, we're watching Ship in a Bottle from season 6.
Although we don't know that for like 10 minutes into the episode. This is the longest teaser lead-in I've ever seen.
That's fine.
There's a cold open and it just goes. It's like, are they going to tell us what show this is even? I mean, I know what show it is, but do other people?
So,
why does Holmes look so pale? Does he have tuberculosis?
So, interesting contrast.
I don't feel so good.
Interesting contrast to that, Descent Part 1, the sixth season finale, had its title card and opening credits, well, the director credits and stuff, in the cold open, because the scene when they come back from the intro was thought to be too action heavy. The credits would interfere with the action on screen, or nobody would pay attention to it because of the action going on. Huh. So that's like the only time in the series that the episode title precedes the opening. And there's your useless Star Trek trivia for the night. It surely won't be the last one.
Not
on this show. Okay, who wants to do the summary this week?
Scoot.
Well, I really enjoyed this episode. So I have like three comments for the entire thing, and most of it will be me shushing you guys so I can watch the episode again.
So, Scott, it is.
So, did anybody else not like the episode?
I didn't think so.
I didn't not like it. I didn't not enjoy it.
So that means that this was your favorite episode of anything ever. If you did not hate it.
He isn't not Africa. He isn't not saying he didn't not enjoy it. But he's not denying that he didn't not love the episode.
Y'all better get used to speaking like this over the next 4 years.
I think we should make Fort Max do it just to see what would happen.
We don't have that kind of time, Scott. No offense, Fort Max. Fort Max has to go to work in the morning, Scott.
Okay, all right. Well, if you want me to drive, I'll drive.
What could possibly go wrong having the person from California drive?
Well,
especially when his car's in is half as disassembled.
Fenders off, no hood.
Okay. All right, we're doing the Ship in the Bottle, TNG, season performer, episode performer.
I want to say 607.
Episode 30.
Thank you. So we called open on the back of Data's head, which is one of my favorite sights. And he's Look, I'll share my fan fiction on Twitter. So
I'll hold you up to that.
I'm sure you will. Don't worry, you're in it too. So Data and Geordi are in the holodeck, clearly doing the Sherlock Holmes thing again, with Data reprising his role as Sherlock Holmes and
for the first time
Geordi
in 4 years.
Watson. So this is apparently the crescendo of whatever episode or play or book or story they're doing. Because
and
now
Data has clearly implemented his accent subroutines.
Yeah, which they're a little buggy.
Execute the method.exe.
Acting. So right now he's got the brother of the person who died. He's explaining who actually committed the murder, and it wasn't a suicide. It was murder because the cigar he had was poisoned, and it couldn't have happened this way because the person was left-handed or right-handed. So he tosses something to the brother that's sitting there, who catches it with his right hand. Which Data goes, "Aha! You're left-handed." And Geordi goes, "No, you're an idiot." And then Data goes, Oh, there must be something wrong with the holodeck. I can't be wrong."
"Excuse you, Scott. I cannot be wrong."
Oh, very good.
Oh.
Also, when Data says that there is some problem
Star
with
Wars
the...
Fan?
Oh, shit. Damn, it's getting heavy.
When Data says there's a problem with the holodeck's spatial orientation matrix or whatever, I just took that to mean that the whole image in the holodeck was flipped right to left.
Yeah, that's what I figured too. It's because they didn't try to read anything. Remember that Batman animated series episode where he was dreaming and he couldn't read anything?
Yeah.
Because you can't read in your dreams?
That's not true, by the way, but yeah, I remember the episode.
Excuse me, it was on Batman animated series?
Yeah. Paul Dini wrote
it. Who am I going to believe, you or Batman?
I mean, you make a compelling case.
All right. So they figured that something's broken with the holodeck. So they're like, "Barclay, get in here and fix this, you idiot."
No, I like that somehow Barclay has become the chief holodeck tech.
Yeah, what?
It was like, you know, giving your morphine addict access to delivering painkillers to people.
Right.
I'm sure this was Troy's idea. It's like occupational therapy.
See, now, Barkley, here's a chance for you to see how screwed up other people's fantasies are so you'll feel better about yourself.
You don't put a diabetic in a bakery.
Well, I mean, you could.
I mean, I would. I mean, just...
Well, it's not good therapy.
No.
I mean, look at Cheers. That alcoholic was running that bar for, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
And everything was fine.
All his hair. Oh, sorry. All right, so they shut down the holodeck. They walk out, all annoyed that the program wasn't working. So they Reg comes running down the corridor, like, out of breath. Like, oh, guys, I'm sorry, guys. He's like Michael J. Fox's dad in Back to the Future. So Barkley goes in and opens up the panel and starts fiddling with it, trying to figure out what's going on. He starts looking through the diagnostics and the logs and everything, and then goes, oh, well, there's a hidden protected file that you shouldn't open. So Barkley goes, oh, well, open the file, clearly. It's protected. You should immediately open it without any safeguards or regard of what could possibly happen.
I mean, it's just the holodeck. What could possibly go wrong?
Right. Yeah, I mean, because nothing has ever gone wrong with a holodeck before.
Well, it hasn't when Barkley's been around. This is his first holodeck disaster.
Well, besides his personal life.
Well, yeah.
Right, but that's not the holodeck.
Right.
That's Barkley.
That's real life.
Yeah. So Barkley activates the hidden subroutine, Dr. Moriarty, which clearly says on L-Cars.
Mm-hmm.
And Moriarty appears and goes, hey, what the fuck are you doing here?
And plus, wasn't it saying something like, wasn't he finding that that's where some errors were coming up?
Something like that.
Yeah.
So Barkley has a present. And this actually, like I said, I love this episode. It's very well written. It's very tight and very consistent, which I really like. So Barkley goes, are you left-handed or right-handed? To which Moriarty responds, left-handed. So Barkley tosses the spanner at him, and he catches it with his left hand. So, oh, okay, well, that's working. So Moriarty looks at it and goes, what the fuck, and throws it on the ground. I love that look of disdain. He's like, don't throw shit at me. And he just throws it away.
Yeah.
So then Moriarty begins to explain to Barkley, he's like, I've been in stasis for 4 fucking years, and I am so pissed right now that I am talking very slowly and importantly.
But his sound is immaculate.
They really are. So Barkley starts kind of going, wait a minute, you've been running for 4 years and you know your holodeck program? That's weird.
And Moriarty, can I just talk to Captain Picard?
Yeah, so yeah, Moriarty just gets tired of this shit. Clearly a panty waste. I want to talk to someone with some balls.
Now, the one thing that I knew going into this that, yeah, Moriarty was a villain in that holodeck Moriarty was a villain. So the thing I was wondering is, why has nobody told the guy they have fixing the holodecks about this?
Because they've forgotten.
Yeah.
Which Moriarty
says, you forgot about me. They're like, oh, no, we didn't.
Yeah, I know. I love that scene. Picard starts eating shit like crazy. We'll get that.
I love the idea that Data and Geordi are still doing the Holmes thing and they forgot about Moriarty.
I know they created a new life form. They're like, eh, whatever. We see him like twice a week, whatever.
But Dan, yeah, do you think we're forgetting about something important about this program? No.
Nah. But Fort Max is quite right that how would Barkley, being the holodeck tech, not know this? Not be made aware of it? Or there being like a warning label on the protected area, like, do not open till Christmas. Kilroy was here, something. All right. Blah, blah, blah. So Moriarty makes some references to the past episode that he was in, talking about his hostage, which, from what I gather, is Pulaski, which lost. Yeah. I had moments of consciousness. Also, the acting in this, the guy that got to play Moriarty is, like, fantastic.
He was good in The Nanny, too.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't he, like, the butler or something?
Uh-huh.
Oh. And so he's just this poor actor. He's like such a great that he gets paired with these annoying other actors.
Fun fact, he's from Arkansas.
No.
Or Kansas.
Arkansas, Kansas, whatever. He's from America, though.
No, Arkansas.
Yeah. It's like an archangel. It's like
Arkansas, your Kansas. I don't really care.
It's when Kansas gets metal wings.
Oh, pretty sure Apocalypse is going to be happening in that state pretty soon anyway.
Better than a one-wing Kansas.
All right, so Berkeley's like, okay, fine, sure, I'll have the captain come down and talk to you. He just reaches over and unplugs him, which he
how undignified.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to speak to my manager.
I don't know if we could take this coupon, sir. Let me ask my manager. He just unceremoniously fades away out of existence, and Barkley just looks annoyed with this complication to his already shitty life. So he puts the panel back with a satisfying clunk and walks out, and Moriarty immediately reappears, looking smug.
And twirls his mustache.
Oh, he does. With his eyes, which is amazing.
Time to start tying women to train tracks.
Okay, credits, credits, credits. Let's kind of move forward. Okay, so they've arrived in the Detrian system. I thought the B plot was kind of cool to this, too, and how it tied into the A plot. So the B plot is there are two gas giants that are going to collide, and between them they have enough mass to create nuclear fusion. So it's going to become a new star once these two gas giants collide, which is cool, and apparently no one in Starfleet has ever seen this happen real time before, so okay, the Enterprise is here.
Is this bullshit?
No, it's totally real.
Okay. Nope. So planets could just randomly smash into each other and make a star.
Under the right circumstances, theoretically, it would be possible. Basically, what they're saying is the one planet hitting the other planet would increase the mass of the new combined body to the point where it might collapse in on itself, a fusion would start, and if that process keeps going, they basically lay this out in the dialogue, then it would become a little star.
Of course, the problem is that you generally aren't going to have two planetary bodies that don't have enough mass by themselves to have a fusion reaction colliding.
Right. I mean, you kind of have to would assume at some point in this system's history, something came that screwed up the orbit of one or both planets where they can cross paths. Somehow or other, probably. Damn it, Harry.
We're going to use a graviton beam to throw one of the moons out of orbit, which knocked all the other planets out of orbit. But it served our purpose for that 5 minutes we needed it. And then we
didn't
moved
get
on.
Us home any faster, but
yeah, it was
killed a lot of us.
But no, everyone's absolutely right. That's exactly what happened. I mean, because they do say in the dialogue that between the two of them, there is enough hydrogen to have enough mass to create fusion to create a star. So, yeah, they just never seen it happen before real time.
No, I mean, Fort Max is also correct that this is, you know, an astronomically remote chance that this would ever actually really happen.
So, of course, yeah, that makes sense why
no one's ever seen this happening. Yeah.
It's also very handy that we're in a spaceship in space where stars and planets are.
You got to think, though, like, you know, whatever happens here, boy, that's going to ruin that star system's day.
Yes. Because it's going to go from, like, a class M world somewhere in there to Tatooine real quick. Shitty acting and all.
Well, and the thing is, too, like, that star is going to be orbiting around the other star, so it's not even like you could assume, yeah, part of the planet's going to have a massive climate change, but it's still going to, like, only be on one side. No, that star is going to be going around the system. It's going to fuck everything up.
It's going to fuck everything up. Okay, so we cut down to engineering. And again, you know, this all makes sense. Barkley immediately goes to tell Data and Geordi what he saw because he's not an idiot. One thing I did notice is that Barkley's uniform looks like greener or more pale than Geordi's or Data's.
He's probably been obsessive compulsively washing it.
By hand. Must get the shame out. Must get the shame out. Barkley immediately tells him exactly what happened. To which Data and Geordi go, what is he talking about? Like, not even Data remembers.
Well, no, I took it more as Barkley's coming and telling them he's not quite believing himself what happened, and Data and Geordi just looking at each other like, oh, shit.
Yeah, crap. I'm going to go get the captain. So the scene cuts right to the captain in his jacket, his delicious velour jacket.
They have the look of, oh, shit, we left the oven on.
Yeah, they do. Crap.
We had this guy look into the Sherlock Holmes files, and he looked into the Sherlock Holmes files.
You actually opened the folder name porn? Seriously? So we cut down to the holodeck hallway, and there's Picard looking suitably annoyed.
If he did, he probably would have assumed that it was Riker's, so... or Geordi's.
So, yes, they're going to open up the holodeck. They recreate 221B Baker Street, so they can have a place to stand.
Because that's the set they built.
And that's where we are all the time. So, Barclay comes in, restarts Moriarty program, not that he actually needed to. Moriarty appears facing away from them so he can dramatically turn around.
Yes!
Like flourishing his cape. So Picard immediately steps forward and goes, oh, it's good to see you again, guy. Hey, buddy. Long time no see. Hey, you pal. Such bullshit. Yeah, how's your mom and them? Yeah, I've been meaning to call. I don't know why Picard sounds like an old man all of a sudden, but...
Well, Scott.
Shakes your life. Oh, Lord.
Picard is at least 60 at this point.
Is he?
Like, in show, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know
that. Corey responds to me, like, cut the shit. Why am I still here?
Yeah, which is awesome. And another thing I like about this episode is Moriarty is pretty much right on all accounts.
Yes.
There is nothing in here I was like, no, oh, you're just being an asshole. It's like, no, you're totally valid in feeling the way you feel. I would be pissed, too. So Picard goes in this big spiel. It's like, oh, we've been looking into it. We got our top men working on it. Who? Top men!
You don't know any of them.
Yeah, Moriarty's like, I've been here for 4 fucking years, and this is the best you got is you don't know? Seriously?
And then Picard's all like, yeah, they've told me that you've been experiencing the passage of time, and I want you to know I'm taking this very seriously.
So seriously. Yes, sir, let me put you on hold for just one moment. I'm taking your concerns very seriously. Yes, sir, very seriously. Mm-hmm. All right, so Moriarty's like, fuck it, I want to leave. So Picard's like, you can't, bitch. Check this out. I'm going to disintegrate a book. Look, I'm a wizard. Zap. What do you think about that shit? Yeah, that's what I thought. So Moriarty, playing his part, goes, yeah, well, I'm sentient and I'm self-aware, so mind over matter, motherfucker. I'm going to walk out of here like a queen. And he does, much to everyone's surprise.
So someone had the presence of mind to immediately call for security.
Yeah, I like to say he's like, cogito ergo sum, I think therefore I am.
Or as my caption said, speaks in Latin.
Which is such bullshit. That's so hilarious. It's not like this is like crazy Latin. It's every high school student knows this shit.
It's a dead language, Scott. Let it go.
Look, if people can still wave the Confederate flag, I can still speak Latin. So I love the look in everyone's faces as he walks out, and he gives them like a two-fingered salute and then walks away.
That'd be perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah, the rest of the crew step out into the hallway of the holodeck. A little Moriarty shit-eating grin, too. So, yes, the wimpiest-looking security guys ever show up, and Moriarty immediately calls them police because he would recognize them anywhere.
The golden
dress is the same as everyone else.
Yeah, well, you know. So they take him down to sick bay, and Crusher confirms that, yeah, his DNA's a little weird, but otherwise he's fully there. He's got organs and blood and shit. I don't know.
I'd like some elaboration on his DNA's a little weird.
Yeah, me too. I was hoping to hear a little bit more about that. Like,
because that's an odd thing to just drop and not ever reference again.
Right.
He's got an extra chromosome.
Yeah. He's very happy all the times.
His chromosome is XYZ.
Oh my god. Okay. So now Moriarty down in secret.
No, his chromosomes are 1 and 0.
Yeah. Instead of a helix, it's like at right angles. It's in metric. So Moriarty starts asking very pertinent, you know, good questions like, so we're on a vessel of some kind. What sea do we sail? Where are we at? How do we get out of here? What's out here? So Picard goes, oh, well, there's some things you should know. First of all, I'm not homosexual. I just talk this way. So they take him to 10 forward.
Of course, there was that one episode of Frasier.
Yes, and the movie Jeffrey, but whatever.
Yep.
Which was awesome. Yeah, Moriarty steps into 4, sees the stars, and goes, oh, yeah, well, adrift in the heavens. Picard goes, no, we're not adrift. We know exactly where we're going.
Out there.
Most of the time.
That away.
We're not doubling back to pick up dignitaries. Goddamn school bus.
Yeah. Well, at least they're not in Excelsior.
So Moriarty
sometimes
is just
they get to actually do their job.
Moriarty is just overcome with excitement. He's like, oh my god, this is great. I'm out of here. I can go do anything I want. I want to know everything about everything. And Picard's like, whoa, you know, you're a smart dude, so we'll start filling you in. And Moriarty's like, give me books. I want to know. Yeah. And Picard does make the point of, like, criminal behavior is still frowned upon because, you know, you're a supervillain. Which I was wondering if they're going to bring that up. And Picard very slyly goes, don't try any shit here. We will catch you.
Marty's like, no, you don't understand. I'm not bad. I was just drawn that way.
Yes.
Which, I mean, taken on its own is a very fair point.
Yeah. I also like the fact that they even make a sly, like, diss against Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. They don't call him that by name, but I think Moriarty at some point goes, yeah, the idiot who wrote me or something like that. It's like, geez. Way to, like, you know, take the fiction.
Maybe it's a dig at the estate because, you know, it stopped them from doing any more Sherlock Holmes episodes for 4 years.
Yeah, possibly.
Really? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Okay, so they thought Sherlock Holmes stories were in the public domain in season 2 when they produced that first episode.
And most of them were.
But apparently there's still enough that was in the rights of the estate holders where, you know, they could cause problems and it would take 4 years to settle it and be able to have another episode come along.
And yeah, the estate was kind of way overstepping
things. Are we
golding
it a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, we have a convenient shorthand for this kind of thing. We might as well use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty much they were acting like, okay, since there were these elements of the characters that were introduced in some of the later stories, that, okay, the entire character himself is still under copyright.
And that tied things up for 4 years.
Yeah, copyright law is weird.
It is.
Very strange.
Well, it's more the thing that they weren't. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Oh, well. At least
only
they did
those
get the
particular elements that were added in later stories would still be under copyright.
But copyright law is still weird given that just that in itself was enough basis to take action for all that time until it was settled. It's a big mess.
It was the 80s.
And part of the 90s.
It was a crazy time.
2000s.
It was the 2300s.
Ha
ha! All right. So Moriarty's like, yes, I can go wherever I want, do whatever I want, but I'm a little hornly. Can you make me a bitch?
I mean, I know they got break it off.
I know they kind of got to, you know, get the story rolling, but man, that's an abrupt jump right there.
Yeah, it's like, I need some tang. It's, you know, space tang, if you know what I mean. So,
third impact?
So, Lady Regina. Can we just take just a moment just to Regina?
I think Mickey just did.
Yeah, all right, good enough for me. So,
let's call it Regina for short.
Yes, I do miss the Gina.
Lady Gina.
Lady. As opposed to the other kind.
I love her new album.
Yeah, she's got that weird hair down there. All right. So they get in this really cool, Picard and Moriarty get in this interesting conversation. And Moriarty's like, look, I demand you make me a mate, Dr. Frankenstein. And Picard's like, oh, no, I'm not falling into that moral trap. We don't know if it's going to work. We don't know how you happened. We're not about to make another thing like this to have two headaches to worry about. And if we tried, it may not even work. So give us some time to figure out what's going on. And Murray's like, no, now. Give it to me now. Want it now. Now.
Now that I have a functional penis, it demands use.
Yes.
Have you heard of the holodeck?
Yes, let's just stroll back in there and see what happens. Activate Vulcan Love Slave, program A2.
Activate Riker 1 through 12.
Simultaneously.
That's all superimposed. Oh, that would be weird to like activate multiple holodeck programs at the same time.
And yet Rikers 1 through 12 are remarkably similar.
Right. It's just like hair color changes of the women.
The hair color changes and the terrible jazz song in the background changes.
Right.
Yes, all the Riker numbered programs are just attempts to recreate that again.
All right, so we get up to the ready room where Picard, Data, Barclay, Troy, and Crusher are sitting in there trying to figure out what the hell to do. Troy's trying to be helpful. She's wearing her normal Starfleet uniform, which is weird.
Well, this is after Chain of Command, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
After Captain Ronnie Cox ordered her to, you know, stop wearing whatever that was before.
Right. Much to Riker's chagrin.
But much to everybody else's relief, because that was looking kind of awkward by season 6.
Yeah.
And truthfully, she looks better in a regular uniform.
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot easier to take her seriously, for one thing. I mean, you know.
I mean, she looked better in Encounter at Farpoint, wearing even the skirt uniform.
Oh, yeah.
And not having the beehive hair and the crushed felt bodysuit.
Mm.
That thing looked terrible.
I thought her dress looked nice, though.
The blue one,
gypsy
yeah.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was nice. It's too bad that didn't appear again after, like, season 4.
Yeah.
So tune again next week for Fashion Trek.
Make it so.
Well, yeah, I mean, me and Mickey are fans of Fashion It So, the Star Trek fashion blog.
Yes.
Doesn't update much anymore, but we're still fans.
Agreed. All right, so basically they sit in the ready room, they talk about it, and they're just like, we don't know anything. Let's just keep gathering information and figure out what happens. That's really the gist of that scene, I think.
This episode has a lot of, we don't know what's happening. We don't know what's happening. Let's find out what's happening. We can't do anything. We don't know what's happening.
It's usually in response to Moriarty pushing them, though, and them either stalling for time or showing their kind of moral superiority for not wanting to jump into something that could be harmful. That's the way I took it.
Of course, also considering that they just left him sitting there for 4 years.
Well, you know.
I think he's taking things rather well, don't you?
I do, actually. Because he described it as like moments of consciousness that were worse than hell or something like that. Oh, my God. Exactly. So cut down to, which I can only assume are Moriarty's quarters. So Picard is sitting there very daintily, telling Moriarty, he's like, well, we've decided to wait to not just go ahead and, you know, make your, you know, Bride of Frankenstein just yet. To which Moriarty is ultimately pissed and says, yeah, the only reason anything gets done around here is because of me, so screw you. Picard insults him by calling him a criminal.
That'll help.
Yeah, Moriarty starts saying, oh no, she's pure as the driven snow, and that's why I love her, blah 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 blah. And also I was programmed to, you know, love her, and she was made specifically for me to love, so
that kind of flies in the face of what he was saying before about how he wouldn't be a villain now because he was just written that way.
Right.
How sentient is he, actually?
Well, that's the great joke of this, is they leave off together, and, you know, in about a week they realize they're not meant to be together. So he just returns to a living hell of being on the shuttlecraft forever with this bitchy woman.
No, he probably just opened the rear hatch and, you know.
Oh.
Let nature take its course.
Because it is Moriarty.
Yeah.
And the holodeck is just simulating her dying in space forever.
Oh, my God.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. Holy jeez. Okay. So they're in the middle of their heated, gentlemanly discussion when Riker calls down to Picard, hey, get your ass up to the bridge.
I think Picard probably just arranged for that call like 5 minutes earlier.
Right. Okay, if I'm there for 5 minutes, then call me, okay? I don't want to be in there with that guy. All right, so they're watching the two gas giants start to coalesce, which is going to happen in the next 5 hours.
Also, I got to call out the special effects they did on the remastered version.
Yeah.
Because this is damn pretty. Whereas in the original, it was more just a couple of blobs.
All right,
like,
so
the effects got seriously dressed up for this.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Jupiter, though.
Yeah. Jupiter deserved it.
Oh, jeez. What did Jupiter do to you? Did you leave that giant red spot?
I bet Fort Max is more of a Mars fan.
Yes. All right. So they're sitting there watching the pretty planets, and suddenly the power starts flickering, and they realize that the command functions are now all offline. Oh, shit. Picard tries to turn it off and turn it back on again to no avail.
Basically, they're having the same problem you were having earlier.
Yes. Barclay, take out that fucking hard drive and blow it off with canned air. Plug it back in. Yes, the SATA drive one. So they're like, oh shit, what's going on? And then Moriarty just strolls onto the bridge, pretty as you please.
Hello, I own your ship now.
I really expected Worf to attack him. So I do like a Worf kind of slyly reaches underneath the console and pulls out a Type 2 hand phaser.
I love the heaps of pistol taped underneath his desk.
Yes! How great is that?
I'm surprised he didn't have one tucked into his bandolier.
Or inside his wrist holster.
Yeah. That's what the Type 1 is. Yep.
Yeah.
Which is why you can't.
Are you sure he doesn't?
Well, you never know because you can't even see those things on screen.
Yeah. So, whatever. So Moriarty's just like, look, I control your vessel. Give me all your shit. Do what I tell you to, or we're all going to die. He's like, I got nothing to lose and everything to gain, so make me my Bride of Frankenstein. Picard's like, dude, we're all going to die. He's like, I don't give a shit. I'm just a fictional character, unlike you, who are real and not fictional characters at all. There's a little bit of kind of nodding and winking to the audience throughout all of this, too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're watching a show with fictional characters talking to yet another fictional character, and one of them is complaining about being a fictional character. So it gets a little meta. Picard orders Data, go ahead, do what you got to do, fix this fucking problem, get the Countess off the holodeck, whatever it takes, because, you know, I don't want to die. Or something, I don't know. Dooga dooga dooga. So down in engineering, Barclay, Data, and Geordi are trying to figure out how to make something on holodeck real. So apparently the holodeck uses like fake matter.
Yeah.
Like holodeck matter, which is a different kind of matter. It's unstable.
So I think I read in like one of the technical manuals once, like it replicates matter, but it does so in a way where all of its cohesion is managed by force fields, not by actual, like, molecular bonds, so that way it can be disassembled to get... Like, it's a lower energy use thing than, like a replicator or a transporter.
Right, like lower resolution.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, see, at first it didn't make any sense to me, but...
It's not actual matter, it's just stuff.
Right, right. And
it's
any
colored
kind of,
and shaped like people or chairs or whatever, but really...
And it's animated by force fields and apparently low-frequency tractor beams, if I remember what I read right.
Right, right. I think also it has, like, chemical creators, too, so like smells and air and all that stuff can be taken care of as
well. I mean, if you're replicating matter...
World.
If you're replicating matter, it wouldn't be that hard to also replicate smells by the same process.
Well, smells are just matter.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
When you smell a fart,
it's a fart.
Yeah, you're little inhaling pieces of poop someone's particles. Butt is inside your face.
Yeah, it's going inside your lungs. It's and, like you know, when you're breathing shit.
You know, when you're using Bukake.mpeg, it's authentic Riker Hollow semen.
Yes.
I'm getting pregnant just thinking about it. So, strangely enough, and it's kind of weirded me out, Picard is now in engineering. We don't see him in engineering very often.
This is important.
It is important, but it was kind of weird how he just kind of, oh, hey, guys, what's going on down here? All right, so Picard's like, basically, look, he's got me by the balls. Let's just do what he says. Can we fix this? Da-da-da-da-da. Geordi's like, I don't know. Thanks, Geordi. I guess I'll just lie and say we're making progress. So then now he pulls Geordi aside and is like, how did Moriarty take over my ship? And Geordi just says, well, he's just brilliant. And handsome. And he's got a big penis. I mean, I guess that's the only only thing we need to know.
If anybody would know, it's Geordi, since, you know, he's got the visor that can probably see through pants.
He probably doesn't have a choice about that either.
Right.
He is well acquainted with the dongs of every man on that ship.
Sounds like some fan fiction.
Oh, it probably exists.
Oh, we'll ask Fort Max about it later. All right, so Data and Barclay are kind of walking around. Barclay,
of course,
is
he also has to see Luxuana occasionally.
Well, if it's her wedding, then everyone has to see her.
Right. And Beta Z weddings. All right, so Barclay's going to go into the holodeck, set up some pattern enhancers, and see if they can transport an inanimate object off the holodeck, see if the transporter can make the artificial matter patterns and basically turn them real so it recreates them but in stable matter. Pretty genius stuff. Very interesting theory.
Though you would think at some point in the history of holodeck, somebody would have been like, you know, I wonder what would happen if we did this.
Exactly. That's the only problem I had with this is, like, no one's ever tried this before. That would have been, like, the first thing I would have done.
Yeah.
Just to see what would happen. Just to see if I could break it. Look, I'm a programmer. It's my job.
See, that's why the holodeck malfunctioned so much. They did not have any, like, beta or play testers on it. They just, like, wrote the code, gave it a look over once, and then rolled it out and, you know, just...
We're like, yeah, saw that it compiled, and we're all, okay, we're good.
Yeah.
Yep, send it out to deep space for a 5-year mission. It's good.
So, it's the holodeck by Ubisoft.
Yes.
Ooh, ouch. Yeah, but every time they try to fix it, it just gets worse.
I mean, is that better or worse than the holodeck by Bethesda?
Bethesda, if they made a holodeck, like, weird shit would happen, but it'd be hilarious and fun. It wouldn't crash the whole thing and make it miserable.
But Bethesda might be more accurate because they rely on the users to fix the problems.
That's true. Oh, God. Can you mod holodeck programs? I guess you wouldn't need to since they're, like, infinitely malleable. Oh, well. Like, I want to play the Sherlock Holmes, but using, like, the nude mod or something, you know, where all the females have, like, ridiculously giant tits for no reason.
Yeah, I don't see why you couldn't just tell the computer to do that and, you know.
Right. Well, you'd be getting a visit from the counselor pretty quick, I think.
So, not necessarily. If you take the Barclay introduction episode, you know, unless it interferes with your daily life, what goes on in the holodeck is kind of your own business.
Man, that gets creepy real quick.
Yeah, right?
Alrighty. As I reach over and delete my browser history. Yeah, that's terrible that would happen. Alright. So, Berkeley comes in, and there's the Countess. Again, a fantastic actress. I've seen her in a few other things, and I remember even watching at the time how much I liked this actress. And she's very accommodating. She's like, sure, put those things anywhere. As the conversation goes, she's very inquisitive. She's asking Barclay what he's doing, and he's doing the best he can to explain. So eventually he just kind of breaks down and tells her, look, I'm setting up pattern enhancers to enhance the molecular pattern of this object so we can transport it off the holodeck. She goes, oh, yes, that's what Moriarty was telling me. He's like, oh, you know? you know you're a program? He's like, she's like, yeah. So Moriarty already took it upon himself to make her sentient and self-aware.
Well, you know.
So this kind of goes into like the super AI problem of once you create one and once you create two, they should start growing exponentially and just take over everything, right?
Yeah, presumably. I mean, Moriarty could have raised a whole holographic army.
Mm-hmm.
Made them sentient enough to leave the holodeck.
Yeah, like under a thousand that theory. Of them to take over the ship.
That would have been interesting.
So she
I could have seen Voyager doing an episode like that, too.
Yeah. Like a thousand doctors roaming around the ship.
Oh, that'd be great.
I say. Oh, my.
Wait, why is that one George Takei?
Yeah, oh, my. So she asked Barclay, so have you ever been to Africa? He's like, well, we've been to a planet kind of like it, but we don't like talking about it.
Well, he wasn't there then.
Shut up.
Also, I find it odd that in the 24th century, when travel anywhere is so easy, Barclay never visited Africa.
You know, I think he spent most of his time in space. We don't even know if he was even born on Earth.
Why would go to Africa when there's a holodeck right there?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to learn from Africa that a holodeck couldn't teach you?
Pretty much. Except for malaria.
I was going to say that. Yeah, I have to think, even in the 24th century, there's probably some part of Africa where they, like, preserve malaria as a thing just for, like, historical purposes.
Yeah. Tsetse flies are part of the natural environment. Respect all of the natural creatures.
Ebola, look, if Chek, we got look, that.
If Khan can recognize Chekhov, then Barclay can recognize Planet Africa, okay?
Well, yeah. Except there's no evidence that Chekhov was not on the Enterprise in that first year, just not being featured.
He was on the lower decks.
Yeah.
Oh.
And, you know, Khan would have, like, a perfect photographic memory, so even if he just saw him in a corridor once,
all right,
he would
so
remember.
Moriarty comes home, and then basically starts plowing the Countess.
Okay, question, though. Where did he come from? Because, like, Barclay came in through the door, which is on, like, the wall behind them. Moriarty comes in through the door on the set, which is in a completely different direction.
I can only assume that all of London is recreated in some fashion. I mean, because this is Sherlock Holmes. They go all over the place. So anything that would be in the story, he could probably go to, right? Anywhere in London.
I guess.
He does come in with, like, a bottle of wine, so maybe he went to Chateau Picard and picked up a bottle.
He does also have quarters on the ship. It's just, like, I don't know, it just seems weird that at that moment he's coming in through the door in the program rather than coming in from outside.
He just wanted to pull a Kramer. Let the man have it, okay? So Barclay is like, you made her, you gave her consciousness? Like, didn't we tell you not to do that? And he's like, yeah, well, what are you going to do? Stop me? I own your ship. Fuck you.
Actually, no. All they said is they weren't going to do it.
Right. So Moriarty does have the good sense to go, look, do your test. I'm not willing to try it first on her because, you know, I don't anything bad to happen. Blah, 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 blah. And she very adeptly explains what the pattern enhancers do because she is very smart. And I love Barclay's facial expressions. This is a whole encounter. He's so pleasing. He's just happy someone's talking to him. It's awesome. He is. He's just like, oh, I'm having a conversation with people. Well, kind of.
That's why Barclay's so comfortable through this whole thing, because, you know, even if they're sentient, they're still just holodeck characters, and he knows how to talk to them.
All right, so he's all set up and ready. He contacts Data, who's in the transporter room, and tells him to go and initiate and see what happens. So they try to transport the chair, and nothing comes over on the other side. Just nothing. So Data tries to figure out what goes on and tries to look in the logs, and the logs are empty, like as if it never happened.
Curious.
Ooh-ee-oo. Creepy.
Data's like, this is bullshit. Nothing makes any goddamn sense.
Yeah. Barclay's so pleased with himself. He's like, he's just short of like throwing his elbows together with his wrists up and just, and then it doesn't work. And he's the saddest Barclay ever. Oh, well. Okay.
You
so yeah, Data.
I am about, I am just imagining Barkley just snapping one day, killing all the crew, and then replacing it with the holodeck versions of the crew that he made, and just transporting them out.
Transporting all the other people like into space outside of the hole, and then immediately replacing them with holograms. Yeah, Data's like, what the shit?
The gears start turning.
Yes, and the vacuum tubes start firing. All right, so Picard again is in engineering, comes down and talks to Geordi, goes, so, what you doing? You fixed it yet? Geordi thinks he's fixed it, and basically asks Picard to put in his authorization codes to see if it'll work. To which Picard agrees and puts in his authorization code, and nothing happens. Then Geordi picks up a pad and starts plinking away on it, and Data goes, what the fuck?
Hey, Geordi, catch.
Throws him a spanner, and Geordi catches it with his left hand. And Geordi's like, why did you throw shit at me? And then Data susses it all up and explains it to everybody. Hooray! We never left the holodeck. This is all an unending nightmare.
Dramatic sting music.
Dun, dun, dun!
No!
I think it's so interesting because Geordi is part of the hologram, and when they're explaining to him that he's a holodeck character, and they're, you know, saying that he is and none of this is real, I love his that non-committal reaction from hologram Geordi, because that's what hologram characters act when you talk about stuff that isn't part of their programming. They just kind of sit there patiently wait for you to get done. So using deductive reasoning, Data explains, look, well, as soon as we walked in, we were in the holodeck. Murray already changed the programming. We've been on the holodeck ever since. We're not actually on the ship. We're still on the holodeck. He rerouted communications. He rerouted everything.
I mean, we are on the ship, but...
Well, yeah. So Data steps back, pulls off his comm badge, and then chucks it at the warp core. And the holodeck wall appears. Fuck. And now he doesn't have a comm badge.
He could pick it up off the floor.
He could, but he didn't.
Not immediately, but he had it later, so he must have.
He just replicated a new one.
From the holographic replicators.
Yep, which is why it doesn't work any time.
Look, if Odo can, like, ooze a communicator out of his body mass...
Oh, that's hot.
I think all bets are off as far as that goes.
Yeah. Was the communicator already in his body mass or not?
Keeps it in a special cavity. It's all sticky when it gets out.
Just forms a bubble around it.
Yeah. So Picard calls up to Riker. He goes, hey, Riker, where am I at? And he goes, oh, you're in engineering. And Picard goes, no, I'm in holodeck 3. That's not really Riker. And he looks at Geordi and goes, okay, you can go away now. And Geordi just looks at him and then walks away. Exit, stage left. The Data goes, look, it's me, you, and Barkley. We're the only one real, like, in this simulation. So we got to get the fuck out of here. Yeah, okay, yeah, they're in the simulation. And Picard just goes, I... just said my command codes. How fucked are we?
Well, smash cut to the bridge.
Yeah. Oops, I made a boo-boo. Well, so much for that admiralty. My own ship just stole the codes from me so it could pilot itself. Outsmarted by his own ship.
To be fair, the computer is kind of an asshole.
Picard's kind of dumb. it's like your car taking you someplace you don't want to go.
This never would have happened to Janeway.
No, because she would have blown up the ship out of spite. The first time the computer said, I'm sorry, I can't do that, she said, initiate self-destruct sequence. Or taking an axe to the main computer core. I mean, she would have done something.
You know, right. I could see her having an axe taped under her bed.
Next, taped under her command console.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, it's funnier, though, she has to walk all the way back to her quarters, bend down, pull it out from under the bed, and then walk all the way back.
Gives her that much more time to get angry. All the command crew get real nervous when she just stalks off the bridge for no reason.
Without saying a word.
Is she going to come back with an axe this time, or nobody knows? Or a cup of coffee. They just never know. All right. So we cut up to the bridge, which is the real bridge. And Moriarty is sitting in what looks like a crew quarters, talking to Riker and Geordi, going, by the way, Captain just gave me the command code, so I'm your boss now. So... I want off the holodeck, make it happen. Here's what the guys down here have said they're gonna do. So why don't you try that?
We do. Geordi all helpfully is like, well, if they said it, they must have thought they were onto something.
Yeah, we do get a title placement drop though. A title drop.
Yeah.
This little ship in a bottle of mine. All right, so Warrior explains to Geordi, he's like, look, here's what they're trying, here's how it failed. Now, if you try it, it might work, because you actually have a real transporter. So, get on it, boy. Keep in mind, he's from, like, the 1800s. So,
yeah.
All right.
They
don't even say no. They're just looking at him, listening to the explanation, and Warrior, like, turns up the temperature of the warp core just because. Oh, you don't like that when I do this, do you? Oh, man. Riker gives the squintiest, I'm going to teabag the shit out of you the first chance I get. Look. I know that squint. Look at that squint. Oh,
are you saying you've received that squint before?
Oh, I have. Well, from Riker. I think we've all seen it plenty of times from Riker. I mean, he's already... The wheels are turning to drape his leg over somebody. All right, Picard walks into the holodeck to talk to the Countess, because maybe she'll help, because she's self-aware and she's close to Moriarty. Maybe he can appeal to her better side. Regina, Countess Bartholomew. God, this episode's so British. Now, here's one thing that I want to go to, like, Memory Beta or whatever... she offers Picard tea, and he says no. And I think this is a huge oversight to the character.
Well, it's not real anyway. Probably it's not Earl Grey either. And yeah, that just won't do.
Yeah, I'm not drinking Arizona, goddammit.
Just top out a can.
Yeah. Ooh, now I want some
this
of
is
that.
Part of the other malfunctions. It's like everyone's left-handed, and they drink Arizona canned tea.
Oh, that sounds good.
I know, doesn't
except for
it?
The left-handed part. That's just evil.
Tea is gross. And... Don't drink it. It's bad for you.
No, but what I get is the one that's the half tea, half lemonade.
Oh, the Arnold Palmer.
But then,
yeah.
God damn it. If you have 5 gallons of ice cream and 5 gallons of shit, you only have 10 gallons of shit.
Right, by mixing lemonade and tea, not ice and shit.
Yeah, and what you get is all tea.
If
we're going to listen to health advice, it's going to be from Hey Mickey, who is the paragon of healthy living.
Hey, he's smaller than I am.
Hey, I live on coffee and Adderall, so I don't want to hear nothing from y'all.
Wait, what happened to the vodka?
I ran out. And it stopped working, so I think my liver needs a break.
I thought you were an alcoholic. No, I just ran out. Oh, okay.
Man, I'm going to miss drunk Mickey.
I haven't been drinking for the past 3 or 4 months now, so.
Man, I miss drunk Mickey. Thought the podcast was getting more boring.
Fort Max, you're going to have to step it up.
Yeah, you need to get on heroin.
Well, that tops where I was going. I was just going to ask Fort Max what kind of liquor is in the house.
Oh, sweetie, you'll look so good on heroin, trust me.
Heroin chic.
Yes. You should be so skinny. Get those cheekbones going. Ugh. Love it.
Those I've clothes been trapped just... by a cat.
I'm sorry, what?
I've been trapped by the cat, so.
Is that like train spotting? Is this another code phrase I don't know about? Or...
No, it means I have a cat sitting on me.
How big is the cat?
What's her name?
Luna.
Is it a real Luna or is it the plush one from Pretty Guardian?
CGI.
This is a podcast. Unless you have artificial meow.
Okay. Someone who can reach their computer without disturbing the a cat, get him a picture of the plush Luna.
That shouldn't be too hard.
The one from Sailor Moon? Because I know that Luna.
Do you know the live action one?
No.
Well.
All right. Episode is paused. We're stopping this train for this.
Oh, here, even better. This is both of them at once.
Oh, well, okay. So it's a plushy Luna. Okay.
Yeah, see, instead of trying to use, like, a real cat in some capacity, they use plushes to represent the characters.
And would swap out the eyes.
Wait, like, in the TV show?
Yes.
Yes.
The live-action TV show.
From, they use like, plushy.
Yeah. I would call it puppetry, but that's really giving them far too much credit.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not. Not remotely.
Okay, so there is, it's just, it looks like someone's picture just took a picture of two plush toy cats, and yeah. Apparently they use these as characters in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, let's see.
It also gave Luna human form.
Well, that might be interesting. Considering the cat doesn't wear clothes, that's not going to be good.
Well, that'd be great, Scott, except okay. That the human form is 8 years old.
It's anime, though. I mean, she's actually like 1,000 years old, but like 8.
It's live action!
All right. Well, it's freaking me out because the eyes are all wide now. So, okay, anyway.
From the people who look, brought you Kamen Rider.
Thanks, Toei.
We'll bring you an uncommon Rider.
Where's our live action Kamen Keiko?
Didn't they do
Keiko
that?
Kamen, whichever it was. Yeah.
Okay, so Picard is explaining to the Countess how they need to basically turn off the Heisenberg compensators and let the atoms and quarks basically re-scramble themselves.
Into pure blue myth.
I get that reference. Which apparently, you know, because it's not going to try to Heisenberg compensate not real matter, that it'll uncompensate and then just keep the pattern, and then it'll just use real molecules to recreate the thing. So that's the idea of what they're gonna do. But Kirk goes, oh, even though I just told you that, I don't think we should actually do it for reasons.
See, Picard knows this whole thing's bullshit, but he also knows that, like, Moriarty and the Countess aren't going to know what a Heisenberg compensator even is.
Right.
They've never met Heisenberg.
No.
And they don't know how much he's compensating.
Well played.
He was very famous for this cucumber and he kept in his pants. All right. So Picard just basically says, look, either this happens or we're all going to die. And Countess is like, look, that sounds like a threat. He's like, look, it's just going to happen. So either we kind of do things my way or we're all going to die. I'm not choosing this shit. Talk to Moriarty. And she's like, okay, fine. I'll try to talk to him. Blah, blah, blah. So back up on the bridge, they're watching the planets coalesce, which is pretty fucking rad.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, how much time do we have till that thing ignites and we all get burnt to a crisp? Nah, anytime now.
are we at a safe distance? It's too soon to tell. How is it too soon to tell?
Yeah, have you never been in space before? Do you not know how stars work? Calculate the mass, and that tells you how big the fucking star is going to be. Jesus. So apparently Moriarty's put force fields around the door to the real holodeck. And that's just insurmountable for just anybody.
I mean, they got him once with that trick.
Yeah.
People just coming into the holodeck uninvited and messing up his plans.
Yeah. So Moriarty's talking to the Countess. Countess is like, maybe we should do what Picard says. And she's like, and he's just like, you're smart and pretty, but you're still just a woman. We're going to do things my way. I was like, oh, well, there goes all the feminism in this episode.
It's the 1800s, Scott. There is no feminism.
That's true. All right, so Murray already creates the arch, walks over, and starts talking to Riker. Riker's like, Lude, we got 25 minutes for the Star Ignites, and we're all dead, so let's get a move on. He's like, well, I guess you better do what I told you to, huh? About uncoupling the Heisenberg compensators. And then he does a little eyebrow raise at the end, like, oh, you didn't expect me to say that, did you? Swish and flick. So they turn on the pattern enhancers because apparently that's going to work. So, okay. All right.
Yes.
So they're going to try to use the real Enterprise, ostensibly, as far as Moriarty is concerned, is going to transport them off into the real transport room and then make them real. So how Moriarty even thinks this is going to work is just beyond me.
You have to give him a break. He's only a holodeck character.
I guess. All right, so they step into the pattern buffer. They transport onto the transporter room. And much to everyone's surprise, they're there, they're whole, and they're fantastic. And then Moriarty goes, you need to be on the left side of me. Picks her up and spins her around.
You know, also, Moriarty's probably slightly insane from being locked in a isolated chamber for 4 years straight.
With, you know, periods of disembodied consciousness.
Yeah. So, all in all, he's being very fair about all of this. I mean, like I said, he's pretty valid in all of his complaints. So he steps off and talks to Riker and goes, okay, give me a shuttlecraft. I'm on a helicopter and $1 million in untraceable bills.
Give me the keys to the car and then we'll talk.
Right. So they walk down to the shuttle bay where the lovely couple is getting married and going to go off to their honeymoon with cans on the back of the shuttlecraft, I guess. Riker's like, okay, you want to go to Melos 2? It's nearby. It's full of friendly people. They'll probably be your first stop. Get the fuck off my ship. Because, you know, we got a star that's about to ignite.
You know, it would have been great if Riker just gave them a shuttle that didn't have a warp drive.
Right. It's a slow boat to China, bitch.
Well, no, if you think about it, though, right outside is two planets that are about to collide and ignite into a star.
Mm-hmm.
Without that warp drive, they're not really going to get away from that.
Nope. And I like how the Countess is just like, oh, this is so lovely. Thank you, Riker. Ha, ha, ha. You know, she's like totally misreading the scene and how pissed Riker is. Oh, you've been lovely. You know, it's like, I hate you. Get off my ship. All right, so in the shuttlecraft, it's all voice activated. They get into the stars and they're like, oh, look, stars. Oh, it's so pretty. All right, so now Moriarty, now that he's safely away, interfaces with the Enterprise, relinquishes the control back to the captain. Baka, 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 baka.
And then, shock, Picard walks into the shuttle bay.
What?
Yeah. What? Not before the Countess is like, can we go back to Earth? And he's like, maybe.
Eventually.
Oh, why do you want to go back there? Shit sucks.
But that's where I keep all my stuff.
So, yep, as you said, Picard walks in, ends the hologram, boom, ends the program, end the holodeck. And the program is stored. So then he walks through the hallway, to the door, into the hallway, talks to Data and Barclay are standing there, and ends the program again. Which dutifully ends the program, and now they're on the holodeck again.
And everybody leaves, but not before Barclay grabs a yellow thing out of the wall.
And then they end another holodeck program.
Right.
It's like Jesus. A Russian nesting doll of, we don't know when to stop.
And they all ended holodeck programs for the rest of their lives.
All right, so, yeah, they all walk out. This should be the last one. Yeah, I like the little cube thing, the huge stack of Icelander chips they pull out. That's pretty cool.
The thing that I'm pretty sure was totally not there when Barclay opened the panel in the first place.
Ah, but he opened the left panel the first time. He opened the right panel this time.
Yeah, okay. But the holodeck was reversed, though. Left was right, right was left. So now they're all up in the ready room, and now we get the exposition.
Observation lounge.
Is that what that is? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's not Picard's ready room. Yeah, you're right. Observation lounge.
Conference table, big windows, no fish.
Yeah. You know, where they meet, the meeting room, where they confer. So it's the conference room. Fuck you.
It's not the ready room, though, which is what you said.
That's true. All right, so now we have the exposition of, okay, here's what happened. We went in, reprogrammed it, so they thought they were off the ship. We used the same trick on Moriarty he used on us. Now Moriarty, in a little pocket holodeck universe, is contained in this cube, and now it has a battery pack I've plugged this into, and now they'll be good forever and ever and ever in this false reality.
Which is
reality.
Good, because we only programmed empty space into it.
Right. But it's procedurally generated like No Man's Sky, and it's just as boring. It's just as much content as No Man's Sky. Oh, look, a purple planet. Oh, look, a green planet.
You can go anywhere.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter because it all looks the same. Ha, ha, ha.
And there's nothing to do.
And all the names reset after 2 weeks.
Yes. So Barclay's cradling this thing like it's a baby. And the little ego boost he must be getting from holding this universe in his hand going, God, I could take a hammer to this. I could destroy a whole reality. And he tries to end the program.
Berkeley just thrilled because he got through the whole episode and didn't really fuck anything up that bad.
Right. I mean, it's kind aside of from, all his fault.
Aside from that little bit.
Yeah, except for the fact that it's all his fault.
But nobody caught on that this was Berkeley's fault.
Yeah, he got off scot-free.
Yeah, no one blamed him going, wait, there was a protected program and you just opened it without asking anybody? You know what protected means?
It would like it's like the system files on a computer.
Yeah, delete system 32 and make your computer run faster.
Exactly.
Except he wasn't doing that. He was looking at him.
It was contained in a zip file. He had to open the zip file to get to it.
It was Schrodinger's file. He didn't know what was in it until he looked at it.
You're right, exactly. All right, so he cutely tries to end the program, and when nothing happens, he self-assuredly smiles and walks out. Then we get a really cool ship shot outside looking at the new nebula that is suddenly ignites into a new star. And it's
now,
really
if the best
awesome.
I remember from the original version of this episode, instead of that at the end, you just get like a blank star field and in the distance a light flashes. And that's okay. The creation of the new star. So like they majorly dressed up the effects.
Right, which as well they should because it's fucking rad.
Yeah.
All right, well, I thoroughly enjoyed that episode. I thought it was great. It was a good mindfuck. The plans made sense. Moriarty was a good villain because he was relatable and pretty legit.
And now he lives on a shelf.
Yep.
Or he might live on as the Doctor. We don't know.
Right.
You know, after he regenerated.
Oh, God, stop it.
Can you imagine Ricardo as the Doctor?
I have imagined that.
The American Doctor Who? That would be fucking awesome.
He could totally do it, too.
And also, another series would be called Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. Can he do the imperious, holier-than-thou speeches that Doctor Who does?
Have you seen the Doctor?
I have. But when the Doctor does it, he does – it's a very okay. – like.
Have you seen Inner Space?
Oh, we yes, I have.
We could have a cowboy movies. Doctor.
Oh, my God. That'd be awesome. As long as he does the accent. That weird non-committal accent that he does.
Oh, so Star Trek news. We got our first cast member.
Oh?
Michelle Yeoh.
Oh, that's right, from Hidden Dragon, Crouching Tiger, Dragon Hiding and Crouchings.
From Tomorrow Never Dies, bitch.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, she's awesome, so fuck yes.
Yeah, she's like Academy Award-winning super badass actress.
Yeah, I just hope they're going to be using her for her dramatic skills and not force her to do kung fu in a Starfleet uniform, because that would be super lame.
Yeah, if they put her in a cat suit, I am going to be kind of pissed.
Well, she's like 50-something, right? So,
oh boy, how racist are we about to get?
I'm saying Star Trek doesn't have a good track record of putting ladies over 50 in cat suits.
Well, it depends what they look like.
Right. I think she could probably pull it off.
She's ready to pull it off, but could she get it on?
Well, it'd take about half a bag of talcum powder, but it could happen.
I mean, she's no Eartha Kitt, but I mean.
Ooh. Oh, please. Oh, nobody's Eartha Kitt. Rawr. Like, the real progenitor of the cat suit. Mm.
Have you had a chance to see the new animated Adam West Batman movie?
I have not.
It's fantastic.
Nope. Yeah, it looks interesting.
But specifically, one thing I absolutely love is during the fight scenes, all Catwoman does is just pose sexily against the wall while everyone else fights.
So it is really just the most tongue-in-cheek, self-aware thing ever.
Well, that's what Batman 66 was.
Right.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying that this cartoon is just continuing that tradition.
Yeah, it's like double self-aware.
Right. Like postmodernist.
So, as goes next week, I had the thought, and that thought is, let's continue the holodex for one more week and do Deep Space Nine's Take Me Out to the Holosuite.
Deal.
I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah.
Because fuck the Vulcans.
Well, in a holosuite, you can do that.
And you don't even have to wait for Pon Farr.
Nope.
Every week is Pon Farr at Quarks.
Intro quote.
How did he get that done in neon? That's awesome.
Nice.
Yes, well done, hey Mickey, well done.
Okay, we're running late, so that's going to be our show for this week.
Yep.
I'm not even going to wait for Scott to say something mildly amusing to end it on. Good night.
Art, stop.